Hi, this is Mark Cuniberti. You're about to listen to another edition of our award-winning economic show entitled Money Matters. The information given on this show is obtained from a variety of public sources and is deemed accurate at time of airing but is not guaranteed. This show is pre-recorded at an earlier date, so market indices and related stock market references may not be accurate at time of airing, and we will not be taking any listener call-ins. Thanks again for listening. Now enjoy the show.
Discussions in this show should not be construed as specific recommendations or investment advice. Always consult with your investment professional before making important investment decisions. I am an investment advisor representative through Cambridge Investment Research Advisors, a registered investment advisor. The views expressed are my opinions only. They do not necessarily reflect those of Cambridge, KVMR, its staff, members, or underwriters. Welcome to the 219th edition of our economic show entitled Money Matters. Today's show is The Fed Speak, What's Next? Money Matters is about money, as money does matter, and the matters of money affect us all in some way or another. Whether you have a lot of it, a little of it, or none of it, it controls our economy, our country, our planet, in some way or another, controls the very way we live our lives. It's about your money, your lack of it, or abundance of it. It's about our lives and livelihood. In short, it's about you. How's everybody doing today? Been a couple of weeks since we've been on here. And welcome to all the community radio stations that are joining us today. And the Dow, Thursday, 12:10 p.m., October 15th, is up 180 points. Again, flirting with 17,000. Punched through 17,000. Well, last week, I think 5 days, it was up over 1,000 points, and got up to about here, and then fell down a day or so ago, and right back up here again. So we'll keep an eye on that. And of course, you're welcome to send an email to the program director at any station you're listening to this at to comment on the show. We always welcome your comments, and thank you very much. My name's Mark Cuniberti, the host of today's Economic Forum show. Well, we have to see what's going on with the markets, right? With that nice scary fall and 1,000-point drop one morning. And now it's up about 1,700 points, the Dow, since that scary drop. And we'll see if it can hold the 17,000 level or not. These major resistance levels, 17,000, 18,000, 19,000, 16,000, 15,000, these round numbers are support levels or resistance points, and they usually would try to punch through a few times, so we'll keep an eye on that for you, of course, and keep tuned to Money Matters and try to educate yourself on your money. Feds didn't raise interest rates, as many people had predicted. Some people predicted they would. Some people predicted they would not. And they did not. So we're going to see what they do in the next meeting, which is coming up in a couple of days, I believe. Now, this particular Federal Reserve meeting doesn't have a news conference after it, and a news conference is usually necessary or thought to be a requirement for any monetary policy move. And had some interesting postings on earnings. I think Walmart came out and posted some what the street regarded as disappointing earnings. And of course, other companies posted some fairly decent earnings. So we're going to see. We're in earnings posting season. So that's sure to affect the markets. So we are stuck on low interest rates. It seems that they have been near zero for a half a decade or more, doesn't it? They have been ultra low and at the self-professed emergency levels set there by the governmental body called the Federal Reserve Bank. Federal Reserve Bank believes low interest rates encourage people to borrow more, and therefore they all have more money to spend. I suppose this is true. But is this any way to run an economy or foster a recovery? When people borrow money to spend, is that a good thing? Does it make sense for a good financial plan in your house? Probably not. But the Fed seem to think that what won't work in a household budget will work on an economy many billion times bigger. Now, not only do low rates encourage people to take on more debt, is that a bad thing or a good thing? I think it's kind of a bad thing. But low interest rates do other damages to an economy that maybe you're not aware of. Low interest rates are thought to cause inflation. Just look at the housing prices of the mid-2000s. The ridiculously low mortgage rates enabled fierce competition between home buyers. And because of all the money flowing into the housing sector, and as the banks went hog wild cramming ultra-low interest rate loans to every buyer that walked in through the door, housing prices skyrocketed. That fueled, we now know, a speculative bubble where higher rates begat higher prices until the whole thing imploded, almost bringing down the world's financial systems to boot. But low rates also flood the markets with money, as investors use low rates to borrow more than they would had rates been higher. So if interest rates are higher, you're going to borrow a little bit less. But when interest rates go lower and lower, people borrow more. The lower the rate, the more borrowing there is, obviously. And with so much money available, those wishing to borrow money, such as companies or individuals, have many sources to go to, which means they can shop around for the lender giving the lowest rate. This ongoing competitive market shopping, where dollars are everywhere, drives borrowing rates further and further down as lenders vie for customers. Some of this money finds its way into the stock and bond markets, where investors seek better returns than the anemic low interest rate environment, such as what you can get in a savings account or a bond somewhere. When money is shuttled into the bond and stock markets by people looking for better returns than what's in a savings account, that by definition can inflate dangerous asset bubbles like the real estate bubble we had, which can pop later on causing financial havoc. One only has to look back at the dot-com fiasco or the real estate bubble to see the damage that bubble implosions can cause when things go in reverse, as they always do where bubbles are involved. Now, another hazard of low interest rates, which you may not think about at the onset, is marginal companies which possibly near the brink, can borrow money to stay alive, where otherwise they may have folded up tent by the way of a bankruptcy filing. Startup companies with poor business plans can also arise because of the low cost of borrowing. Just think of some of the dot-com companies that arose because borrowing was so cheap for them. Low rates are thought to foster zombie parasitic businesses, which should be out of business. But they are kept alive by low interest rates. This perpetuates the bad management that they may have, their bad decisions and bad business models. High interest rates, on the other hand, ensure that only the best businesses survive because they're the only ones that can afford to borrow at the higher rates. The most efficient businesses that survive bring the most value to consumers. And because they're more efficient in utilizing resources, they use less of our natural resources. So low interest rates perhaps foster very inefficient companies, which might burn up more natural resources in making the things that they make. But high interest rates make sure that only the best businesses survive. So you could say that high interest rates conserve our natural resources in a better way. Efficient businesses use less resources, and inefficient ones burn up resources due to their inefficiencies. Now, if we want to take a real-world example of this, take the companies today that drill, explore for, or refine oil. Many of these companies should be dead and buried, but are kept alive through this low-cost borrowing, these low-cost rates that are available to them. These companies, because they are alive, then they add to the supply, and they can cause gluts which lead to plummeting prices. Although plummeting oil prices are good for the consumer, gone too far, low oil prices can stop these marginal producers from making a profit. If they're profitable at $60 or $70 a barrel when oil drops to $40 or $35 or $45, they have trouble staying alive. In order to stay alive, they pump even more oil, which floods the markets even more, causing more price reductions. It's sort of like a self-fulfilling prophecy. Such is the situation we find ourselves in today, where many companies have borrowed so much cheap money, their combined production is driving oil prices to decade lows. This oversupply is caused by the low borrowing rates these companies can obtain money at in today's debt markets. They borrow cheaply, so they stay alive. They can finance themselves cheaply, so they stay alive longer than they normally would if interest rates were normal, which is normally about 5 or 6% historically. In plain English, if we make money too cheap to borrow, you get more and more marginal companies that then add to an already abundant supply of whatever it is they are producing. We have a word for this in economics. It's called malinvestment. And throughout history, low interest rates, which we also call easy money policies, foster malinvestment. In simple terms, too many companies are living on cheaply borrowed funds, which are made possible by low interest rates. As a result, they are just producing too much stuff, and some of them not very efficiently. Both bubble economies and malinvestment type economies have many things in common. They eventually implode, causing massive economic damage, and both are brought by ultra-low interest rates. They cause massive inflation in certain assets and give false signals about demand and supply to businesses, which causes them to make wrong investment decisions, which is the malinvestment, which ultimately wastes funds and resources. Think of all the houses we might have plowed down during the housing boom. Once it went bust, we had a lot of houses sitting on the market, and some of them were bulldozed over. That's a waste of resources. The feds keep trying to halt the implosions caused by low interest rates with more low interest rates. They fail to see the correlation between the implosion and their cause. They believe low rates is the cure, not the cause. But every time we see low rates, such as we saw in the dot-com fiasco, and in many other historical blow-ups in history, and most recently the real estate bubble, all these were caused by low interest rates, easy money fueling these things. When they blow up, the feds drop interest rates again. Now, a lot of times these low interest rates will cause the bubble to reinflate. We get what is called an echo bubble, or they cause a bubble in a different area. People are saying, I'm through with dot-com, I'm going to go somewhere else, and they went to real estate. And then they might say, well, I'm through with real estate, now I'm going to go somewhere else, I'm going to go back in the stock market. Until the Federal Reserve wises up and see how things in the economy really work, we are likely in in my opinion, for more economic implosions, with each one subsequently being worse than the last, because they actually do get worse than the previous time. And we can see that in the magnitude of the dot-com bubble, which we thought was great, but it was reflected in a much larger implosion from the housing bubble. We'll be right back on your economic forum, Money Matters. This is Mark Gunaberty. And welcome back to your Economic Forum show entitled Money Matters on your community radio station. This is Mark Gunaberty. Thanks for joining me today. So as a market analyst, we look at various things to see where the market is going. No one can tell you which way it goes. It's impossible. Well, the person would be a billionaire, like Back to the Future, when the guy brings back a book to himself when he was a small kid about all the results in the sporting contest, and he became a billionaire because he knew exactly who was going to win and who was not going to win. Well, it's tough to call market direction. It's very difficult. Some are better, some are worse at it. But we do look at a variety of things, many, many things, such as a weatherman looks at many things to see if he can predict the weather. One of the things we look at is yield on junk bonds. Now, junk bonds are bonds of companies that I previously mentioned earlier in the show that are marginal companies that are perhaps cash-strapped, and they have to pay a higher interest rate on the money they borrow, such as your brother-in-law. You may loan money to the U.S. government for hardly anything, but if your brother-in-law wants to borrow money outside of the relationship, he might be a little risky, so you might charge a little bit higher interest rate. The yield, the interest rate that junk bonds pay are rising. And that may spell bad news for world markets in general. Typically, one of the things that are regarded as a canary in the coal mine, when junk bond yields, which are lower rated bonds, so they pay a higher interest rate, when they start to rise in comparison to a safe, what is regarded as a safer investment, such as U.S. Treasuries from the U.S. government or U.S. bonds, when the spread starts to widen, in other words, junk bond interest rates start to go up because companies that are marginal have to pay more to get you to loan them money, it means that investors may be starting to perceive a riskier environment. Historically, when the spread between the interest rates paid on U.S. government IOUs and the yield on junk bonds starts to widen, investors are thought to be moving to cash due to the perceived safer haven of U.S. government backing, such as what is given with treasuries or U.S. bonds. If markets, stock markets falter and companies begin to struggle, the default rate on these junk bonds tends to increase. And as things, times get tough, obviously, companies that are near the surface as far as their financing is concerned can't pay their debts, and they will start to default on their bills, on their bonds. As this starts to happen, investors leave the junk bond sector as they grow more concerned on the return of their money rather than the return on it. I just want my money back. I don't really care what you give me. So they begin to just want their money back. In the crisis of 08 and 09, junk bonds, and indeed many lower-rated bonds, fell drastically in value, which means what they pay, the interest they pay, goes up, which is called their yield. So when the price of a bond falls, it means that the interest rate they have to pay is going up. Looked at it from the consumer point of view, when the price of a bond falls, you are demanding more interest to take that bond because it's a weaker bond. You don't trust the person that's borrowing your money, so you just demand more interest. In times of market calm, investors don't sweat the little things. They don't sweat the lower yields of junk bonds. They're not too worried. Economy's humming along. Relative to safe U.S. debt, junk bond yields are larger, but maybe they're not as grandiose as you might get in a U.S. Treasury, and those spreads start to narrow. As the markets weaken, we run into economic problems. We see the yields on junk bonds start to spike over the yields of U.S. debt yields. And we're starting to see a little bit of that now. By no means is this a surefire way to gauge future market movements, but historically, it can be an indicator. It can be a harbinger of things to come. Now, there's also something a little bit more complicated called the TED spread. The TED spread is the difference between interest rate on interbank loans, only when the Bank of America loans Wells Fargo, and Wells Fargo loans money back to Bank of America, or they loan it to Deutsche Bank or whatever. These are called interbank loans. When the interest rate between those loans that the banks make back and forth between themselves start to rise in relation to these U.S. treasuries again, we call that the TED spread. The spread between interbank loans to each other, the yield, and the yield on U.S. government bonds. The size of this spread is usually denominated in basis points. Now, it gets a little complicated here, but we'll try to make it simple. For instance, if the U.S. Treasury bill rate is 5.1%, don't you wish, and the interbank loans are loaning at 5.5%, the TED spread is 0.04% or 40 basis points. The TED spread fluctuates back and forth over time, but generally has remained between 10 and 50 basis points, which is about 0.01%, 0.05%, except in times of financial crisis. Then the spread, much like the spread on junk bonds versus U.S. Treasuries, the spread between interbank loans and U.S. Treasuries also widens. And this usually indicates that liquidity or money is being withdrawn from the markets and money's getting a little tighter. Right now, although the spread on junk bonds is rising a little bit, and as is the TED spread rising a little bit, the spread is widening. Think of a widening river. The TED spread is nowhere near the levels we usually see during huge market upsets, but it is rising right now. And if it continues to rise, this spread, this TED spread, along with rising junk bond yields, may be indicating investor concern about markets faltering, which could translate to broader weakness down the road. So we'll have to keep an eye on the TED spread and the spread between U.S. Treasuries and junk bonds. Of course, you wouldn't know it today. The Dow is now up 207 points as I speak, 12:31 p.m. on October 15th. You, of course, may be hearing the show a little bit different time. That's okay. So we'll keep an eye on that. Another indicator for those technicians out there and those that like to educate themselves on the market, you can Google up the TED spread or the yield on junk bonds and see how that spread is doing. And as it widens, it means people are nervous. And as it narrows, it means people are getting more complacent about the market. Well, we have more news. Out on a next possible bubble, there are possibly many bubbles building, according to many analysts. But Moody's, in an analysis of an Equifax credit reporting data about a branch of debt going bad, and something we covered many times before here on Money Matters, and it is the subprime, not mortgages. You thought I was going to say mortgages, didn't you? Subprime auto loans. Subprime auto loans are booming. In fact, auto dealers, auto car companies are selling historically a very high level of automobiles. And can we guess why? Well, just like the housing boom, credit is now being given to anyone who can breathe and sign a loan document to get that shiny brand new car. Subprime auto loans. Seems like the world of subprime loans just never go away. Outstanding auto loans have reached $860 million, up 22% since 2010. Not necessarily a bad thing. What's concerning here is the type of loan that is saturating the auto market. You guessed it. The average term of car loans is now a whopping 65 months, with 20% of new loans stretching up to 84 months. You know, as growing up, you used to see a car ad, it would show you the price of the car. Ford Mustang, $4,999. Now, you never even see that. All the car auto ads just basically tell you how much you're going to pay down, how much interest you're going to pay, and how much you're going to cost you a month. People not even concerned on the outset, or at least apparently, people aren't concerned about what the car price costs. They're only concerned about how much it costs them a month, no matter how many months they have to pay the loan off. The average amount of car loans are climbing also with the increase in auto prices. The average loan is upwards of $26,000. That's the highest on record. And finally, the subprime type of loans made to borrowers with less than desirable credit is now at 27% of all car loans. That's a double in questionable car loans that existed in 2009. With the auto companies raking in profits by recording the highest sales since the crisis of 2009, the incentive to make even more car loans is feeding right into the eye of the new bubble. I don't think we can look for Washington or the Federal Reserve to do anything about it, though. Just like the housing boom, there's too much money being made. And the auto lobbyists are running through the ivy halls of Congress to make sure the money keeps flowing, much like we saw in the banking sector. History may not repeat, but it certainly may rhyme. Banks, once again, are doing their part as well. In a similar move of what they did with mortgage loans, they are packaging up subprime auto loans and distributing them worldwide in large packages. Once again, getting many of them rated safe and secure. So many big pension funds that are not allowed to buy anything but safe and secure debt are loading up on auto loans. That, of course, with the cooperation of the same rating agencies that assured investors home mortgages were safe. Only time will tell if this all ends badly, but it is said history never repeats. But it can rhyme, as I said. We can only hope if it all goes bad, the taxpayer won't be asked to pick up the tab again. Maybe if it gets too ugly, of course, the government will once again pay your car loan off. And won't that be nice? You're tuned to Money Matters. We'll be right back.
My toes, lots of candy on my
And you're tuned to Money Matters, your economic forum on your community radio station. Thanks for joining me. My name is Mark Cunaberdy. Yeah, the Federal Reserve did hold rates steady in their last interest rate meeting. Again, not coming through on their promise to raise rates for the umpteenth time. And something been forecasted many times by many analysts. And you only have to listen back to previous shows and newscasts to see what I said about it. And so now the jig is up. What do we do in the coming up in the next interest rate meeting, as I mentioned, in October? And there's another one in December. Now, the one in December does have a press release after it, and those are usually the ones where significant monetary policies are announced. This one coming up is kind of a minor meeting with no press release. But we will have minutes from them, and they always seem to move the markets. Since the Federal Reserve had held fast on rates and decided again not to increase their interest rate, the markets have reacted violently, up one day and down the next. Of course, up today and up again, like I mentioned, 1,700 points since the low of the flash crash. 1,000 points in a few minutes. That was a very, very scary day for sure. The stock market moves, up until recently in the last couple of days, they have been pronounced. And investors looking for some sort of calm after the Fed meeting and the fact that the Feds did not raise rates were sorely disappointed. Off the lows of about 15,300 on the Dow a few weeks back, it's gained some 1,700 points or so to oscillate back and forth now around 1,700 level, giving investors hope one day and then trashing them the next as gains evaporate. One would think the lack of movement on interest rates by the Fed would have led to a prolonged rally, and although we did get a rally up 1,700 points, it was indeed fairly short-lived, and now we're right back to the bipolar markets we're seeing. Now investors are left wondering again what is next, both in the markets and with the Federal Reserve. The Fed's next interest rate meeting, of course, is coming up a couple of weeks away, a couple of days away, and with the same uncertainty we had prior to the last meeting, one could argue little has changed. Wanting to provide market stability and avoid a possible sell-off by keeping interest rates where they were, the Feds have apparently just prolonged the agony. Round and round we go with the Feds, and we are again left wondering if they will raise rates. This month, a familiar theme, it seems, to all of us. With the budget limit once again in and out of the news, some overseas markets still struggling. Oil, of course, still struggling. Uncertainty is about the only thing that is certain. And these radical movements are reflecting that uncertainty in investors' minds. Now, technical analysts, people that just look at charts and graphs and lines and mathematical equations, technical analysts point to the historical precedent that hints the Dow may have to retest its recent low. Some analysts say that the Dow will have to retest down in the 15,000s again. And only then will it be cleared for liftoff into the election year or the Santa Claus rally. This is only one view, of course, while others believe a sustained upward movement is fast approaching or is already here. To be sure, with the Chinese economy still convulsing and the U.S. debt limit up for grabs, add in the recent implosion of the Brazilian currency and some large Brazilian corporations and some other overseas markets, one could argue economic conditions are far from ideal for the markets to continue to run upwards and instead search for new lows or at least revisit the recent lows during last month's trouncing. Some analysts are going so far as to hint that more QE, more money printing, might be in the cards for the U.S. But with the threats of increasing interest rates on the front burner from the Fed, it would be a far stretch of the imagination to believe the U.S. Federal Reserve will do an abrupt about-face and not only hold rates where they were, but double-barrel the problem with another round of quantitative easing. It'll be interesting to see what they say in October, and then interesting what they do in December, if anything. More quantitative easing is ongoing in Europe as they fight to stave off a recession there, and in Japan as we speak, and China has also taken a seat at the QE table, initiating its own version to save the market's bacon with the printing presses. China, of course, devalued their currency just a few months ago. With so many cross currents, it's no wonder investors don't know which way to turn. I think until some of these questions get answered and some issues resolved, a sustained movement in any direction is probably not in the cards. But then again, I, like the rest of the world, cannot call market movements for certain one way or another. Much like a stop clock being twice a day, I can say for certain markets will go up, go down, or they will go sideways in the days and weeks to come. And it's truly anyone's guess in this most difficult market environment. And in my opinion, it is a difficult market environment. In conclusion, if you're wondering just what to do with your investing portfolio, in times of uncertainty, a well-diversified portfolio with some cash reserves can at least reduce some risk. After all, the cash portion in a portfolio won't go up in an up market, but it won't go down in a down one either. When in doubt, cash is often thought to be the safest place to be, of course. And finally, in our last 10 minutes or so of Money Matters, in this happy, feel-good world where everybody gets a trophy, we find out some people don't believe in such things. What I'm talking about is the proverbial participation trophy. A little bit off the economic beaten path here. The participation trophy is given to kids and adults alike for taking part in sports programs, school projects, and other worthwhile endeavors. The participation trophy is recently a fairly new concept in the world of such things, with it becoming more prevalent in just the last few decades or so, a byproduct of the world of political correctness. You know the drill. Your child joins a little league team or participates in a school competition, or maybe you enter some contest of skill or knowledge. And at the conclusion of such an event, everybody that enters gets some sort of trophy or award. These awards go by fancy names, but I call them participation awards. Indeed, my kids have shells of glistening trophies, which, to the naked eye observer, attest to excellence by my children in all the things they have participated in. A quick glance at the trophy cases in my house would lead one to believe my kids are the best of everything they try. But in reality, we do have a few trophies for exceptional performance and scholastic ability, but only a few. Now, don't get me wrong. I love my kids, and in my mind, they're all champions. But are they always the best baseball players? Are they always the best in academics, the best in spelling bees? No. Our trophy case is full of participation awards, of which all the other kids that have participated have the same trophies on their shelves in their house. Is the practice of handing out trophies carte blanche, teaching our kids the valuable lessons that the trophies of old used to signify? I had a few trophies in my case, but only a few. I excelled at certain things, but hardly everything I tried. One prominent NFL player for the Pittsburgh Steelers doesn't seem to think that participation trophies are such a good idea. The super aggressive and built like a wall. Google this guy up. One of NFL's best linebackers, 2008's Defensive Player of the Year, linebacker James Harrison, believes participation trophies do more harm than good. Google this guy up. I'm telling you, I saw this guy. This guy looks mean. I mean, he is built. Each one of Mr. Harrison's sons received a Best of the Batch Student Activities Trophy for participation. And upon returning home and seeing them, he promptly returned both trophies. Taking it a step farther, Mr. Harrison explained on public media why he was doing what he was doing. He said, "I came home to find out that my boys received two trophies for nothing. Participation trophies. While I am proud for my boys for everything they do and will encourage them until the day I die, these trophies will be given back until they earn a real trophy." I'm sure Mr. Harrison had a lot of trophies in his trophy case that he earned. You get a lot of trophies when you get picked up by the NFL. Harrison then went on his public tweets and postings, "I am sorry, I am not sorry for believing everything in the world should be earned. And I am not about to raise two boys to men by making them believe they are entitled to something just because they did their best. Because sometimes your best is not enough, and that should drive you to want to do better, not cry and whine until somebody gives you something to shut you up and make you happy. Harrison seems to be ranting against the culture of entitlement, where everyone is entitled to whatever they think they are entitled to. As Brad Hopperman of Uncommon Wisdom Daily puts it, who was a professional college football player, college now. Brad Hopman of Uncommon Wisdom Daily says, yet too often these days there is a culture of entitlement that effectively praises someone for who they are and not for what they have achieved. This is a problem in society that starts with things like participation trophies that morph into things like not keeping score at baseball games so as to not to offend the losing team, or abolishing grades as to not to offend kids who weren't able to get straight A's. The biggest problem here is that this kind of collectivist-style child-rearing, where everyone is a winner and there are no real losers and no one child's accomplishments are better than another's, is not commensurate with how the real world works. Brad Hopperman of Uncommon Wisdom Daily. As for my family, My kids bust their butts in school. I bust my butt riding their butt to encourage them to get only straight A's in school. In my house, B's and C's are not good enough. I take a rash of stuff from people I tell that to, saying I'm driving them too hard. But that's how I raise my children. As a result, my kids have attended 24 collective years of school and received only one B between the three of them. They have put in hard work, man, and it takes a lot of energy for me to drive these kids, punish them when they don't get exemplary grades. But my kids have studied when they're tired after playing baseball or track or whatever they do in school. They stay home weekends sometimes, miss events. They sacrifice a lot while their other friends are out playing. And I'll be darned if I think, and if my kids think, that they should get the same trophy as all the other kids who perhaps are not studying as hard or working so diligently and then fail to get such exemplary grades. My dear listener, on this one, I, Mark Cuniberti, side with linebacker James Harrison and the thousands of others who supported his public media blast on his son's participation trophies, whom, as a result of Mr. Harrison's actions, no longer have them. In my world, and also apparently in Mr. Harrison's, achievement deserves reward. Excellent deserves recognition. And only a few will ever attain such stature or deserve it. In my world, and apparently also in Mr. Harrison's, you don't get an award simply for showing up. You're listening to Money Matters on your community radio station. And you're tuned to your community radio station, your economic forum show, entitled Money Matters. Money Matters is about you and your money. And we strive to being the best market analysis, macroeconomic analysis, so you can make sense of the economic world around you. And today is almost closing up on 12:55 p.m. on Thursday, October 15th. Of course, you may be hearing this show at a different time. So the market indices I refer to today may not be accurate at the time you hear this show. Money Matters is downloaded or picked up by about 3.5 dozen radio shows sporadically throughout all over the country. Not in Texas or Canada. Regulators prevent me from airing it down there for some reason. Don't know why that is. So Dow up 218 points at 17,143. Recent low 15,300 some change. High about 18,500 if my memory serves me right. So we're about halfway in between. See what happens there. Gold making a run at 1,200 again. We'll see where that goes. And interest rates still in the dirt from the feds. Was an interesting article out on Yahoo Finance that some of the feds are talking about negative interest rates. Now, that doesn't apply to you yet. But out on Yahoo Finance, they had a side article here that was put out by Reuters today, Thursday, put out at about 11 a.m. or so, 12 a.m. Some of the Fed Reserve officials are talking about negative interest rates. Well, what's a negative interest rate? Well, basically what happens is the banks park a lot of money at the Federal Reserve. They just park it there. So Federal Reserve negative interest rates means if you park money at the Fed, we're going to charge you a little bit to do it. Right now they pay a little bit of interest to do it, but now they're going to charge them, possibly charge them. They're talking about it. Banks would say, ooh, I don't want to park it at the Fed anymore because they're going to charge me money, so I'm going to loan it out. So we'll see what happens. You have been listening to Money Matters, the 219th edition of Money Matters, the Fed Speak, What's Next? Please keep in mind that discussions on this show should not be construed as specific recommendations or investment advice. Always consult with your financial investment professional before making important investment decisions. I'm an investment advisor representative through Cambridge Investment Research Advisors, Incorporated, a registered investment advisor. The views expressed today are my opinions only. They do not necessarily reflect those of Cambridge, KVMR, its staff, members, or underwriters, nor any other community radio station you are hearing the show on. I am an investment advisor representative through Cambridge Investment Research Advisors, Incorporated, a registered investment advisor. My name is Mark Cunaberdi. I want to thank you for listening to your community radio station. Have a great day, and go make some money.
This has been another edition of Money Matters. Please be advised that the views and opinions expressed on this show are those of myself and my guests, and are opinions only, and may not represent those of this station, its staff, members, or underwriters. This show is not meant as investment advice. Consult a qualified financial advisor before making any investment decisions, and do your own research before investing. The information given on the show was obtained from a variety of public sources and is deemed accurate at time of airing, but is not guaranteed. This show was pre-recorded at an earlier date, so the market indices and related stock market references may not be accurate at the time of airing. Money Matters is produced and recorded at the studios of KVMR FM 89.5 in Nevada City, California. You can visit our website at moneymanagementradio.com. Thanks for listening.